It's Jim, it's the World of Bonds. It's Friday, the 27th of May, 2022. This is for professional investors only, never ever investment advice. The US dollar's off about 3% versus its peers over the past couple of weeks, and that's the biggest fall in the dollar since 2012. The biggest driver of this recent bout of dollar weakness, remember it's still pretty strong against its global basket of peers, having rallied for months and months now, really. But this last bit of weakness is really due to the fall in government bond yields and interest rate expectations in the US relative to other countries. So if we remember, thinking back to the 6th of May, 10-year US Treasury bond yield was 3.13%. Today it's 2.74%. So a significant drop in bond yields, I think, that's driven really the weakness in the US dollar. There are some other specific issues going on in some other currencies, but it is broad-based and something to look out for, really. Not least for emerging markets, because reading a note from Citibank this morning that was talking about the reasons why a strong dollar is particularly bad for emerging markets. And you'll be familiar with some of these, but there are five reasons, and it's probably just worth quickly whizzing through them. The five reasons why a strong dollar is bad for emerging market economies and assets. Number one is something called the dominant currency paradigm. So as the dollar rallies, global trade falls because the world's purchasing power over the dollar falls too. And emerging markets, a lot of their growth is driven by trade and commodities and manufacturing and things like that. So a fall in global trade is bad news for emerging markets. And as the dollar rises, trade generally falls globally. Number two is about credit worthiness. So while it's true that many emerging market sovereigns have diversified away from dollar borrowing over the years, certainly since the Latin American EM debt crisis that we saw decades ago now, but nevertheless, they still have a lot of dollar liabilities. And so a rise in the dollar increases the value of those dollar liabilities, and that reduces their credit worthiness. And Citi point out a handful that have seen their dollar debt rise significantly. So Turkey, you'll all know about, but Turkey, Colombia, South Africa, Malaysia have all seen big rises in their dollar denominated debt. And that means that a strong dollar is certainly bad news for them. Number three is really a behavioural effect. So if you look at markets, whenever people are worried about risk, they'll buy the US dollar and they'll sell the euro. The dollar-euro exchange rate is a kind of barometer of risk sentiment. So as the dollar rises, the euro falls, and that implies that risk appetite is lower. And so whether that's driven by weakness in risk assets or whether it's the other way around and what's going on in currency markets drives appetite for risk assets, it doesn't really matter. But nevertheless, when you see the dollar up against the euro, that reduces appetite for things like high yield and emerging markets and equities. As I say, it is circular, so you're not quite sure which drives which, but nevertheless, there is that behavioural effect of a stronger dollar implying weakness for risk assets. That isn't always the case, and we've seen before this sell-off that we've seen this year in equity markets and credit, we do have a period of a strong dollar and strong equities, so it's not one for one, but nevertheless, that is the kind of market meme, is that dollar-euro is a risk appetite barometer. Number four is really purely about China. So there has been a kind of peg between the renminbi and the US dollar. It's not a firm peg, so it moves around and it's not always explicit. And over the past couple of weeks, we have seen, well, longer than that actually, we've seen the renminbi depreciate quite steadily against the US dollar. But nevertheless, lots of things happen when the renminbi is pegged to the dollar, when the dollar is strong. So when they follow each other very closely, which they still are really, despite this renminbi weakness, it means that Chinese exports become more expensive, which weakens the Chinese economy, and a weak China feeds through into weak emerging markets more generally. Also, if the peg doesn't hold and the renminbi is weaker because of a strong dollar, then you tend to get capital outflows from oligarchs and companies and individuals wanting to protect their assets effectively. And those capital outflows reduce the potential for investment within China and weighs on Chinese growth as well. So a stronger dollar and its impact on Chinese currency in particular therefore has an impact on the Chinese economy, which has an impact on global emerging markets. And finally, number five, a strong dollar, which leads to weaker emerging market currencies, all else being equal, that leads to higher inflation in emerging markets. So as the dollar strengthens, it means that imports, for instance, oil denominated in US dollars becomes more expensive for emerging market economies, leads to wider, higher inflation. And that leads to higher inflation expectations, and higher inflation expectations are generally bad for economies, lead to higher real interest rates. And so I think, good note, those five things that Citi point out, the strength of the dollar recently explains a lot of the weakness that we're seeing in emerging markets this year since the dollar became strong. Having said that, as I pointed out, the last 2 weeks have seen a big fall in the US dollar relative to what it had done year to date. And, thinking specifically, moving away from emerging markets, and to the UK, the UK sterling was down about 11% January to May against the US dollar, peak to trough. It's now up in line with everything else, about 3% off its May lows. So it's gone from 122 to 126 against the dollar. Part of this broader dollar weakness, I guess, over the past couple of days, it's slightly outperformed some of those other currencies as well. And yesterday in particular, we saw the news that Rishi Sunak announced what was effectively a mini budget. So they're going to spend £15 billion, which is about 0.6% of UK GDP, on effectively fiscal transfers to everybody. So even rich households will be receiving some money off their utility bills later this year. But it is redistributive, not least it's a windfall tax on energy companies, but it disproportionately benefits lowest income households, which makes a lot of sense, to be honest. So those relying entirely on benefits are going to see their real incomes effectively unchanged from a year ago. I think that makes a big difference to the UK economy. I was very worried that we were going to see a recession. This reduces the chance of a recession quite substantially, I would say, in the UK. Still, I think there are big risks around confidence and so forth. But nevertheless, this is good news for the UK economy. As a result of that, I'm listening to Radio 4 this morning and people are asking whether this is going to simply pump up inflation in the UK economy. It seems that that would probably be slightly unlikely, given it's more like an unchange in real incomes for the lowest income households, and higher income households will still see falls in their real incomes. But nevertheless, questions about whether this will lead to inflation and an inflation spiral. There's the public sector wage round coming up. I think that'll be really important in this debate as well. But as a result of this, JP Morgan has added a Bank of England rate hike into their forecast. So they've put in 25 basis points that they didn't have before in September, and are looking for a 2.75% peak in UK rates from the 1% we have now in the third quarter of 2023. That's it, really. Finally, to end on some good news, I got my tickets to Wembley to see Nottingham Forest in the playoff final on Sunday. So looking forward to that. We are one of eight teams in the Football League never to have played at New Wembley. I'll give you a couple of seconds to remember what the other ones are before I give away the answer at the end of this podcast. But very much looking forward to that, and realise how rare such a happy event has been for Forest fans by thinking about a couple of Liverpool supporters I know who had tickets for the cup final in Paris. One of them has decided to play golf instead. The other has decided to go on holiday instead. And you just think, God, how lucky it would be. I think Liverpool have been, six cup finals in the past 10 years in the European Cup alone, let alone if you add in FA Cups and other trophies. It just goes to show how rare it is for Forest and what a good day out it hopefully will be. A shout out also to my friends Craig and Cameron, who I had lunch with yesterday. Craig claims that he would rather see Spurs win the Carabao Cup than England win the World Cup, which I thought was an unlikely thing. I'm not sure many people who support a club team would prioritise the Carabao Cup over England winning the World Cup. He would, fair play to you. And the answers to the competition, the eight teams in the league never to have played at New Wembley are, apart from Forest, Colchester United, Accrington Stanley, exactly, Blackburn Rovers, Ipswich Town, Crawley Town, Oldham and Port Vale. Have great weekends. Hopefully when I speak to you next, Forest will be in the Premier League. But, you know, not the end of the world. If not, it's been a brilliant season in the Championship. Have lovely weekends. Bye.